In today's episode of the Michael Yadney podcast, we're going to talk about money. The lovely thing about money is it really doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care what colour or race you are, what class you are. It doesn't care what your parents did or even who you think you are. The good thing is each and every day starts with a clean slate. So no matter what you did yesterday, today begins anew and you've got the same rights and opportunities as everyone else to make as much money as you want. Yet the sad reality is the majority of Australians will never be financially independent. On the other hand, a small group of Australian property investors and business owners are becoming very wealthy. And we know that the inequality has changed over the last couple of years, particularly during the last difficult year with the pandemic. So why is it that most people complain they don't have enough money? The simple answer is most people don't understand the rules of money. They're financially illiterate. I don't mean that in a rude way. It's not their fault. They were taught by unwealthy people, in general, their parents. So in today's show, I'm going to have a chat with Pete Wargent about how the rules of money have changed in this new financial era. Just to make things clear, we're not going to talk about simple rules such as spend less than you earn, save the rest and invest. We're not going to advise you not to buy smashed avocado and lattes and save your money instead. I think you'd be disappointed if that was the level of our discussion. If you're looking for more success in life, whether it be through property investment, business or entrepreneurship, you need to understand these new rules of money, how the laws of money have changed in the new financial era, and my aim is at the end of today's show, you'll have more clarity. So, welcome to today's episode of the Michael Yadney Podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yadney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yadney, Australia's most trusted property commentator who has once again been voted Australia's leading property investment advisor. That's the fifth time he's won a similar award in the last 7 years.
Do you want more money? Well, if you respect money and play the game of money by knowing the rules, you'll see a world of abundant money and money's going to work for you. But the rules of money have changed in this new world of coronavirus, according to Pete Wargent. Now, if you're a regular listener to this podcast or a reader of Property Update, Pete needs no introduction. By way of background, he's a chartered accountant, a chartered secretary, and has a financial planning diploma. And he's used all this to help build his own successful businesses, investing in equities and owning a property portfolio that's given him financial freedom in his early 30s. Somebody worth listening to, in my opinion. Welcome, Pete.
Pleasure, Michael. Always good to be here.
Now, Pete, the rules of money. We know that a lot of people are coming to this podcast because of property, but as we've often said, property is a game of finance with some houses thrown in the middle. And you recently wrote a blog on your popular daily blog saying that you think the rules of money have changed in 2020. In what way?
Well, there are a number of different ways. I can think of three in particular. So firstly, zero interest rate policies, which we'd actually got used to in Britain already. I mean, that is now here to stay for Australia as well. And the Reserve Bank has signalled that interest rates will now be stuck at the effective lower bound for essentially years to come. So, but it's not just the cash rate. It's also yields are being pushed down further out along the curve. So one of the key funding measures in Australia is the three-year bond yield, because a lot of people, so you mentioned a lot of people interested in property, a lot of people, of course, fix their mortgage rates for 3 years. So the three-year bond yield now has been pushed all the way down close to zero. So for you and me, what that means is you can borrow now for 3 years fixed at, say, 2.29%. So that these are numbers that we couldn't have even conceived 10 or 15 years ago. So clearly central banks and governments want us to go out, spend, invest, build businesses, and they're putting those incentives in place for us to do so.
Well, a lot of people are worried about debt and taking on debt. Really, it's not debt that's the issue. It's being able to repay your debts that's important. And these sort of figures make investment properties so affordable. The out-of-pocket expense of owning a good investment is very low, the lowest I've ever seen, Pete.
Yeah, completely, yeah. There's a lot of talk about household debt, but as you said, what really matters is in whose hands is the debt, which, and it's mainly in the upper two income quintiles, but also how easy is it for people to service the debt? And the reality is it's the lowest level in about 20 years. And effectively, as a share of household income, it's back to what we were used to in the late 1980s. So a lot of the affordability challenges of 2005, 6, 7, well, mortgage rates have just collapsed since then. So from a serviceability point of view, it's as good as we've seen for decades.
Another change you've suggested in the way money works at the moment is that cash is dead. What do you mean by that?
Well, isn't it funny? I took out, I think, $200 a few months ago back in the early part of the year. And at the moment, I've still got about $150 still in my wallet because almost everything is now, through necessity, switched to credit cards. That trend was happening anyway, but the shutdown this year effectively sounded the death knell for cash as a means of payment. And in fact, the latest usage data from groups like CBA shows that even despite the shutdown, retail spend on credit cards is actually higher than it was a year ago, which is quite remarkable when you think a lot of us have been effectively unable to go shopping. You know, this was happening anyway, but these days money is really an abstract. It's just electronic figures on a screen. And increasingly, we're paying for goods and services using plastic rather than physical currency. So, yeah, cash in the form of notes and coins is really going the way of the dodo.
Well, that's what I thought also until just today when I heard that Australians are hoarding their cash. Recently, the RBA reported the value of banknotes on issue rose by $2 billion, 2.3% in the month of June 2020. There's apparently $90 billion worth of cash splashing around Australia, and it's been the $50 and $100 notes that they've had to print more of. So that's interesting, Pete. I think it's been a common reaction in the past for Australians to hoard cash, but it seems to again be a feature of COVID-19 in this current world. I think eventually, though, the money's going to come out from under our mattresses or pillowcases or wherever people are storing it and send it back to retailers. But it's an interesting monitor of consumer confidence levels, Pete.
Yeah, that's right. So it started out with toilet rolls, but generally, you find when you go into a period of great uncertainty, people do start hoarding, and cash is one of the obvious things for people to get a ready supply of. But as you say, and this just refers back to the first point, the problem when you've got basically stimulatory policies in place, that cash under the mattress is just going to be worth less and less as Reserve Bank and the government just creates more money. So eventually you'll see those notes under the pillow starting to circulate again.
Now, you said there are three big ways that the rules of money have changed in 2020. What's the third one, Pete?
Well, the third one, it kind of ties it all together. If you think back even 20 years ago, a lot of retirees were thinking that maybe term deposits or bonds or fixed interest investments or even just cash in the bank could feature as a part of their retirement strategy. I mean, for a lot of people, that has just gone out the window. And it's more important to be mindful and attentive towards your money and strategy. But I think the third point is really just about mental obstacles, because as already alluded to, central banks around the world now are creating money. If you look at the measures of the money supply, they're creating new money now just at an unprecedented rate. So I think it's become quite clear that, you know, the way we think about money needs to change. And if you actually listen to what people say and the actions they take when they talk about money, people often seem to have this idea that you can somehow only have more or become more at the expense of other people or to the detriment of others. But if you think about what's happening with the creation of money around the world, you'll never be sustainably able to have more wealth if that's your view. Because at the end of the day, money is inanimate. It doesn't care what you think of it. So the barriers to growing wealth are really internally held beliefs these days, and they're just stories constructed in people's heads or passed on to them by people who didn't know any better.
Well, that's a topic we often talk about in these podcasts and privately as well, that really the way you become wealthy is by upgrading your wealth operating system, turning up your financial thermostat. And that's one of the things you and I have fun talking with the people we both mentor and also at Wealth Retreat when we get together. Now, we also, I think, got to be careful and explain that we realize money is important in those areas where it's important and not as all important in other very critical parts of our life. But maybe we should just talk a little bit about personal finance and about money and help people, because money management is a big issue for a lot of Australians. I think that's come out recently with the challenges of COVID-19, where people found they couldn't live for more than a couple of weeks if they didn't have their regular income coming in or if an uncertain bill came. So let's first of all talk about the concept that any problem that money can solve isn't really a problem. Now, that doesn't mean that money can solve all problems, but if you've got a lot of money there and your car breaks down, money, it will fix it. It doesn't matter. You just call the tow truck and you get the guy to come and repair it. But the other thing is, if money is your problem, money won't be the solution either, simply because the problem itself can't be fixed by the solution. As you started to say, you can't have a scarcity mentality about it. You've actually got to think abundantly. So maybe we should start with some basic rules, Pete. I think we both read the book of The Richest Man in Babylon, and one of his lessons is you've got to spend less than you earn. That's really the way it starts, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, it's such a basic point, really, but it's almost so simple that people often overlook it. And it's one of those habits that if you can instill it at a young age, then it becomes ingrained. But so many people, at the end of the month, there's nothing left to show for the paycheck, which is quite sad, really, when you think the number of hours that people dedicate to their careers. It's not just the 9 to 5. It's all of that time you spend thinking about work, getting ready for work, traveling to and from work. And yet so often by the end of the month, people have got nothing left to show for it. And it can be quite soul destroying. So spending less than you earn, it really is the way to moving forward.
Now, I was speaking to somebody today as part of my mentorship program, and I was mentoring this young lady, and I asked her, what's your biggest asset? And she thought the one investment property she had or her health. And I said, no, probably one of your biggest assets is your income earning capacity. And she was earning $150,000 a year. So over the next 20, 30 years of her working life, she's going to earn $4-5 million in today's dollar value. The trouble is, at the end of the month, as you said, at the end of the year, very few people have anything to show for it. So if you've got this long runway that a lot of the younger people, younger than you and I have got, work out where your money's going. People don't like doing a budget, but a budget allows you to spend mindfully to determine where your money's going. So first of all, a budget's looking where you spent money, but it also is about where you're going to spend your money moving forward, Pete.
Yeah, that's right. So it sounds like such a boring word, especially for accountants like me. But yeah, it doesn't have to be, you know, detailed line by line analysis of where every dollar goes, but even just isolating where are the big ticket items, things like cars, weddings, holidays, you know, just trying to pull together just a big picture of your spending profile. If you can't find a way to spend less than you earn, you'll find it really is difficult to keep moving forward.
Of course, if you don't spend less than you earn, if you do the opposite and spend more than you earn, you're always going to owe people something. The trouble is our wages go up, not that they're going up much at the moment, but as our wages go up, so does the spending, doesn't it? You need a bigger car, you need better clothes, you need a bigger house. So my suggestion is you actually start off by paying yourself first. Many people intend to save after they've actually spent what's going on. They've got the best intentions, but every month unexpected expenses crop up, something happens. And as I said a moment ago, the coronavirus crisis has shown us that so many Australians live, well, we used to call it paycheck to paycheck, Pete, but no one gets paychecks anymore. But more than half Australian families couldn't handle an unexpected expense of $400 without going into some sort of financial stress. That's pretty terrible, isn't it, Pete?
Yeah, it is. Thinking about paying yourself first and the ability to save money. You mentioned Wealth Retreat. It was probably the best part of a decade ago. I was listening to Ken Race, who is one of the other speakers, expert in accounting and investing and structures and all of that sort of thing. I remember Ken just explaining to people about if you're able to pay yourself first, save a deposit towards an investment property, and as he said, do you think it's easier for people to save $1 million or borrow $1 million? And of course, you know, we've just basically just removed some of the blinkers from people's eyes and giving people the motivation to show if you can lock away funds in an invested way, so such as an investment property where you effectively force yourself to pay the mortgage first each month, what a fantastic way for people to get ahead. And as is proven by the results that people have experienced over that time.
The rules of money management is spend less than you earn. Pay yourself first, because that's what the tax man does too. It actually takes its money out before you get your portion, because it knows you're not going to be able to pay at the end of the year. So similarly, take 10, 15% out and save it, because you'll spend what's left over, but you've got to pay yourself first and then save it. Now, you're not going to get much in a bank account at the moment, or a term deposit, we know that. But initially start by having a buffer set aside, not your credit card for emergencies when the cars break down and the kids get sick or something goes wrong. As we've said a couple of times, Australians couldn't even cover a $400 unexpected expense at the moment. So have a buffer set aside. And I guess one of the other things is learn not to get into debt for depreciating assets. One of the things Robert Kiyosaki's gone on about for years and years is most Australians don't understand the difference between assets and liabilities, Pete.
No, that's so true. So on the buffer point, actually, that's a really good point you made, because cash in the bank, of course, these days really doesn't earn much. But this is where getting the right structure is so important, because what's become increasingly popular over recent years, especially in Australia, is the use of offset accounts, where effectively you're making that buffer work harder for you. So especially for people with mortgage debt, an offset facility or an ability to prepay mortgages, there are different ways to do it, but the buffer doesn't have to be cash under the pillow. It could be still effectively working hard for you. On the depreciating assets point, well, yes, that's so true. It's one of the first things, you know, we learned at accounting school is, you know, building an income statement and a balance sheet. And you really need to understand that, yes, you can have an asset like a car or a boat or golf clubs, but if they're depreciating assets, that's not the way to get ahead. You know, so appreciating assets, on the other hand, so things like businesses, equities or shares, your superannuation or investment properties, well, that's, you know, that's a really good investment because it's not going to depreciate over time. And if people borrow for depreciating assets, well, that's a double whammy and it really sets you back.
So I guess the aim of all those previous points, of course, Pete, is to get enough money to actually invest the money. So saving is important and having a buffer is important, but having your money work for you rather than you working for your money is important, because no one can become really rich. Nobody can stay wealthy working for money. You've actually got to get your money out working for you. And as we've often said, if your money isn't working for you when you're asleep or away on holidays, you'll never become rich. So use your money to invest wisely. And it doesn't just have to be in real estate, even though you and I are very keen on that as an investment class, but shares are also a way of investing if you know what you're doing, Pete.
Yeah, I think that's it. If you look at all wealthy people, they will have funds in a business, quite often a business that they founded. They will have some of their wealth in real estate, whether it's commercial property or residential. And they'll also have some money in equities, which tend to be more of an income producing asset, but also they're more liquid as well. So, you know, invested money in equities can also form a part of a buffer for people. So usually a balance of all of those things is a really good way to go.
Oh, I think it is important to have a balance. Now, you may not be able to have a balance in a business because a lot of people listening to this are going to be employees, and that's okay. You can have your investment business on the side of property or shares. But in fact, if anybody says to you, shares only, or property only, I think you've got to be very careful also and run away, because they've probably got a vested interest currently. To get the lifestyle that you want at the end game, you're going to need to have your own home with no debt against it. And you're going to need a property investment portfolio with a lowish loan to value ratio so that the banks are still going to lend you money. And you need something to bring money in, and equities, shares are a good cash cow, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And especially actually in Australia, the tax legislation in Australia is very encouraging towards businesses paying out strong dividend yields. It's also very tax effective in the hands of an individual. So we're pretty lucky in Australia for retirees, very favourable legislation. So yeah, a combination of real estate and some income producing shares is a really good way to go.
But the way retirees used to want to do it, Pete, having cash on term deposit, which is the way my parents used to think and a lot of others think, that's just not working at the moment, is it? Those people who are getting 1.5% or 2% on their term deposit are now suffering quite badly.
Yeah, there's a few problems with that. One is that it's not tax effective, so it's still taxable income in the hands of the individual. Secondly, as you mentioned, interest rates are so low now that it's effectively forcing people out of term deposits into other assets. The other issue is that these days, if we live, touch wood, to the age of 65, then on average, we could probably expect to live for another 20 years, and who knows, maybe even 30 or 40. So if that's the kind of possible time frame, you don't really just want cash in a term deposit because that's not got any growth potential for you over that kind of time frame.
Sure, the old concept of having a nest egg and eating it away and hoping you don't live too long has gone down the drain now. So the rules of money have changed. The rules of finance have changed also. So it's important to understand how money works and how you think about money. Thanks for your time, Pete. Now, if people want to know more about you, follow you, where should they find out?
Well, I write a daily blog at Pete Borgen Blogspot. And that's probably the best place for regular free content. And also, if you're interested in my videos, I usually post a couple a week. Try gonextlevelwealth.com.au.
And you're regularly on Property Update and on this podcast. But Pete, your new book, I know it was held up a little bit with the COVID, but it's at the printer at the moment. So by the time people listen to this, hopefully they'll be able to get it at bookshops or online. Just tell us about that one.
So, I co-authored the book with Stephen Moriarty, and the book is called Low Rates, High Returns, so fairly self-explanatory. It's a book for people who are interested in navigating the challenges of low interest rates by investing their own money and managing their own money, especially in stocks.
Well, we'll have a link to all those things in the show notes. Thanks a lot, Pete, and look forward to having you on the Michael Yardy podcast again real soon.
Always a pleasure. Cheers, Michael.
My chat with Pete Wargent inspired you to do something different as we move through these challenging financial times. If you're now looking to set yourself up for the future, why not have a chat with my team at Metropole and make life a bit easier, safer, and protect yourself by allowing us to level the playing field? At Metropole, we offer a holistic approach to wealth creation because you need more than the strategist, you need more than the buyer's agent, you need somebody who's got a holistic approach to help you grow, protect and pass on your wealth. Go to metropole.com.au and you're going to find out how we can use our time-tested system of acquiring wealth to help you. We start by putting a strategic plan together. We help lots of beginning investors buy their first property. Of course, we help a lot of experienced investors add to their portfolio, and successful investors manufacture capital growth by becoming property developers. But we do a lot more than that. We've got financial planning, wealth advisory, renovations and development, property management. Find out what we can do. Go to metropole.com.au, leave your details, let's have a chat, and we'd love to give you some clarity and some direction as we get through these challenging times and move to better times ahead.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's mindset message, I'd like to share with you 7 power beliefs of ultra-successful people. Now, you've probably heard people say success breeds success, right? Well, it is true that successful people get that way through a combination of hard work, positivity, and, you know, even sometimes a little bit of luck. But many successful people, especially the ultra-successful ones, have powerful beliefs that help guide them through their journey to the top. The secret is they understand that success is an attitude that comes from a framework of powerful beliefs and empowering thoughts. Their belief system informs them, inspires them, it helps them take the right actions, And ultimately, it's what makes them successful in everything they do. So I'd like to share with you 7 of these beliefs. As I talk through them, have a think about which one of those you currently believe or how you can change what you believe moving forward to make you more successful. So let's start with the first belief, and successful people believe in themselves. I mean, if you don't believe in your own abilities and potential, how can you expect other people to do so? That's why incredibly successful people have got great self-confidence. They believe that even when they mightn't have all the answers, they're going to be able to work it out. What it comes down to is they've got faith in themselves and in their potential for greatness. The ultra-successful know that if you don't believe in yourself, no one else is going to. Now, the other important belief is that they know they're in charge of their life. Here's the thing, incredibly successful people believe that life doesn't happen to them, but that life's the result of how they respond to the challenges and opportunities. They believe they're the pilots of their life, not just a passenger being taken along for the ride. Now, this is a very empowering belief. The thought that you're responsible for all the things that are happening to you now because of the thoughts that you had a while ago, the actions you took, the decisions you made, this allows people to take charge of their destiny. In other words, successful people don't let setbacks set them back. This is a really important thing you have to do. You've got to recognize that you're the pilot of your life, and things you're doing now, the actions you're taking now, the books that you're reading, the podcasts you're listening to, are determining what's going to happen to your life down the track. So things will go wrong. You will have setbacks, but use them as learning experiences and move on. The third belief I'd like to share with you is that successful people believe opportunities everywhere. One of the most powerful beliefs that ultra-successful have is this abundance mindset. Where many people see obstacles and scarcity, successful people see stepping stones. They see opportunities, greater opportunities. It's the stepping stone to an opportunity. Successful people are problem solvers. They're not complainers. Boy, does that make a world of difference. So there's lots of pessimists out there at the moment and lots of people telling you why things won't get better or how things won't improve. The problem is, if you want to be successful, you've got to be an optimist. The fourth belief of successful people is in doing things no one else is going to do. Incredibly successful people don't shy away from taking risks. In fact, they try new things, even if they seem trivial, even if they seem simple. What it boils down to is they understand that to be different, they must act differently and be willing to try things that others won't do. But the risk they take, they're always calculated ones. So they're not just going to try anything without thinking through what's ahead, but they know that if they do what everyone else does, they're going to get the same results as everybody else, so they do things differently. The fifth belief of ultra-successful people is they believe that execution is critical. It's no coincidence that successful people execute what works time and time again. They understand strategy is only as important as it informs an execution. In other words, it's not the knowledge, it's not the information that's powerful, it's the action and it's the execution of it. The secret is that successful people develop an idea, make a plan, create a strategy, but then they execute it, they take action, and they repeat it again. And if the strategy needs changing, if things need tweaking, they'll do that. But they are action takers. Successful people also believe in winning through hard work. Now, it shouldn't come as a surprise that successful people, ultra-successful people, work hard. They believe that work comes first, and the payoff comes later. So when others quit and compromise their values, successful people keep going. The reason why they become victors in the end isn't so much because they're smarter, better connected, or more talented. It's because they're the last person left standing when the others fall by the wayside. And the last success belief I'd like to share with you in my mindset message today is successful people believe in giving back. I've said it before, giving back is one of the ways successful people show their gratitude for all the opportunities they've been given. Giving back also keeps them grounded, keeps you humble, keeps you in touch with reality. Believing in the power of giving back reminds them that they must keep working and playing their part to make the world a better place for everybody. Now, this last belief is a lesson for all of us. If everyone had the habit of sharing the blessings of their life, we'd all be happier, we'd all be richer for it. Believing that you can be successful is part of the secret to achievement. But believing you can make a difference to other people's lives. that's a valuable lesson for everyone. So my suggestion is now it's time to believe in yourself and take action and set yourself up for the opportunities that the world is going to bring you as our markets move on and as the world moves on. So rather than seeing problems and challenges out there, look for direction, look for certainty, look for guidance. Now, it may be hard for you to do it on your own, and that's where my team at Metropole would love to be part of your journey. Why not go to metropole.com.au and find out how we can help you? Remember, we've got no properties for sale, but we have a very holistic approach to wealth creation. That's exactly what you need at this time, don't you? So you need somebody who has been through these sort of challenging times before to help you. And there's lots of ways we can help you. We can give you strategic property advice by putting a strategic property plan together for you. We've got a buyer's agency, wealth advisory, property management, renovations, development. Go to metropole.com.au, find out what we do. And I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. metropole.com.au or give us a call at 1300-METROPOLE. Well, now you know a little bit more about money. And if you know somebody else who needs to know a little bit more about money, please tell them about this show. My aim is to make as many people financially literate as possible, and I'd love you to help me spread the word. You can either use the share button on your podcast app, or just tell somebody about it, or tell the world about it by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to this show. If you do leave a review and tell the world, and gee, I'm getting a lot of reviews lately, and all 5-star reviews. Thank you so much. If you do leave one and I read it out, I'm going to read out 2 today. And you just email me, michael@metropole.com.au. I'd like to say thank you by gifting you one of my books. So 2 reviews, 5-star reviews today. The first one from Harasleon, I think that's how you say it, left a review on Apple Podcasts, 5-star review, saying, great way to start the week. He or she, I'm sorry, I don't know, said, Michael, thank you. Again, I've started the day with my number one habit, listening to your podcast. Your mindset moment is helpful, valuable, and essential. As always, it's great to have some great thinkers with some real property insights and somebody like you who's not new to property once again. So thank you so much for that kind review. As Kaka Granny sent another review on Apple Podcasts saying, thank you, Michael, for continuously asking the challenging mindset questions. Tuesdays and Thursdays are my favorite days of the week because of your podcast. Now, it's really interesting. Most of the comments I get are about the mindset moment, and that's why I include them, and I hope you enjoy them as well. So if you do, I'll be back again real soon, twice a week. In the meantime, you can catch me on social media, all the social media platforms. Just look for Michael Yardney, or of course on my daily property update newsletter. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?